Yes.
What? Am I supposed to start?
I don't know. One of us needs to. I mean, it's up to me, up to you. I don't care. It's up to one of us. Start the goddamn thing.
Justin Souther?
Yes, you are.
You're Ken Hankey?
I think so. Okay. And we are combined Elitist Bastards.
Uh-huh. We're also Mad Express film critics.
Yes, that's when we get paid. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And we're coming to you from...
The Cinema Lounge, the Caroline Asheville, Hendersonville Road.
This is true. And we have, as always, and not always in our favor, been to the movies. And now we're going to tell you about it, which may or may not be in your favor. So,
yes.
Mr. Justin, what did you see this week?
I saw the Owl movie.
Oh. Tell us about 3D Owls.
Well, I'm speaking, of course, of Legend of the Guardians.
The Owls of Gahool.
Which is a movie full of, I guess, it's full of these things nobody can pronounce. I don't know why they keep making these fantasy things for... What happened to people named Chuck?
I don't know.
Can't these fantasy worlds have people with normal names? Or is that...
Did anybody in the course of this movie explain how owls build things?
Well, they see them smithing at one point. So
with
they can...
what?
Hammers? And...
But how are they wielding a hammer?
Their feet.
With a wing?
With their feet.
With their feet.
With a foot.
Never mind. The whole
talking
thing sounds,
owls,
like, sounds like a cigar ad. Anyway, go ahead.
It's directed by Zack Snyder. He of Watchmen and 300 fame.
Yes.
And much like his other films, it's kind of nice to look at in a really polished way, and it's incredibly boring. Dramatically inert.
It's about owls.
I know. That's part of the problem, is that there's no way of me relating to these owls.
They're dire. As I understand it, there are good owls and there are bad owls?
Yes. Well, there's like these Aryan owls, I guess. They're all calling themselves pure ones. They want to take over the rest of the owls.
Do the other ones have their wings circumcised?
No.
No, okay. I was just curious. I mean,
you would be.
Yeah, is this one of those, if you're 6 or 96, you're sure to enjoy it?
6 might be too young for this movie.
Oh, okay.
Because it is a bit dark in places.
It looks, the clips I've seen make all the sets and things look like Maxfield Parrish gone bad or something.
It's really...
like Maxfield Parrish colors, but they've all been creeped up somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's... sort of almost the same. It's a little... brighter color palette than 300, but it's still in the same sort of...
Any slow-mo blood?
No, you get slow-mo...
Darn.
Owls flying and fighting and...
I'm sure...
Anything that can be slowed down usually is.
Including the plot?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, the main problem with the movie is it's every fantasy and property, like the recent one. Like, it's Lord of the Rings, it's Harry Potter.
Oh, well, you mean real
it's especially
fantasy,
Star
not,
Wars.
Not the things you think about while you're surfing the web type fantasy.
No. Why would you... That wouldn't be... You can just watch it on the internet.
Well, yeah, that's...
It's not really a fantasy at that point.
I guess that's probably true, so...
Unless you're reading slash fiction. I guess that would... Yeah,
well,
that would
we won't go there, so...
When you're typing in slash fiction, not that kind of...
So...
Steve knows what we're talking about.
All right, so I do not consider that this is what I would call your highest recommendation.
No, it's fine. It's dull. It's harmless, but I'm going to forget about it in a month. So.
And we did not learn the answer to the Tootsie Roll Pop question?
Well, we already knew it going in.
Oh.
It's 3.
Yeah, but then he bites it, so it isn't really...
Well, I mean, that's what he says. Would he lie? He has a graduate's cap on.
He's an owl.
With a graduate's cap on.
I have some owl andirons.
Well...
Their eyes glow when the fire's on. It's really kind of cool. Anyway...
Yes.
How does it stack up against the virginity hit?
Pretty much anything's better than the virginity hit.
Tell us about this wonderful cinema.
It's basically Superbad if you took everything that was sort of insightful about Superbad, raunched it up a little bit more.
It's not exactly like Superbad was the most deep movie ever made.
No, but it had some point. Got to the end of it and there was a point.
Yes, okay.
This one, the point seems to be that girls turn into giant sluts if you give them some booze.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
I don't... The readers can debate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well,
I would say no, personally. But
you have no experience with this?
I'm not saying that every girl.
Ah, okay.
In this movie, that seems to be the case. Because you get your dorky main character and then his fat friend that is lewd all the time and trying to get the dorky
one's
virginity
lost. So, in other words, you've got the ersatz Michael Cera and the ersatz Jonah Hill.
Mm-hmm. Except it's more an ersatz Jesse Eisenberg as Michael Cera sort of thing going on.
I mean, this is hard to balance
out. So, but it's got the added pleasure of being a mockumentary sort of... I don't really know if you can call it a mockumentary since it's supposed to be YouTube clips of these... One of their friends likes to follow around and film everything and then put it on YouTube.
So...
It's basically just people with cameras following
these. It's a YouTube-mentary.
Yes.
I don't even like YouTube, so...
Well, I mean, if maybe it had been a commentary on the sort of internet way of documenting the minutiae of these... poor little rich kids' lives, then maybe there would have been something going on here, but it's not. It's just...
dismal.
It's lazy and stupid.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know I've seen the listings for the theater, the one lucky theater that had this, and I do not believe it is still playing this week.
Well, when I was there, there was five people when I got into the theater. They had all left by the time the film was over.
But you, being a professional, stayed.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And so there was an usher doing theater checks that loitered around during a scene in a strip club. I think he watched more of it than they did.
So that's definitely what you would call a negative review.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about that now.
No.
Okay.
It's really awful. I don't know why it played. Besides Will Ferrell producing it. I guess he picked it up later, but...
wiser souls would have left it lying there.
So what did you watch?
I watched Better Things. Well, You Again isn't appreciably better. It's probably less offensive. But it's not good. I mean, it works on the assumption that if you put some remotely decent people in a movie and give them this really stupid screenplay about... Kristen Bell discovers that her brother is getting ready to marry the girl who made her life in high school a living hell.
Right.
And so she decides to break it up. And, of course, the girl from high school has charmed her entire family, including Mom, Jamie Lee Curtis, who is all keen on this whole thing until she meets the high school girl's guardian / aunt, who is her old nemesis from high school, Sigourney Weaver. Laughs ensue. That's a theory.
Is that a guarantee?
No.
No.
I will say that there was a woman sitting behind me in the theater who got the good out of it. Boy, did she get the good out of it. And I believe I have made mention elsewhere that I now know what became of the Oh No Woman from the I Love Lucy soundtrack. Surely you remember the Oh No Woman from the I Love Lucy.
You've never seen
an I Love Lucy?
Nope.
Oh, my God. Culturally deprived and depraved you are.
I'm fine with it.
Well, yeah,
would
I understand
that. Would you trade places with Heaven and Earth? having never seen an I Love Lucy episode. Would you be okay with that? Could you go to the grave?
I'm okay with never having seen Seinfeld or Friends. But I feel that my life would not be complete if I had never seen I Love Lucy, because if I had never seen I Love Lucy, I would not know that hell consists of an endless clip of Lucy and Vivian Vance with that conveyor belt with those goddamn chocolates on it. I know this is what happens to you in hell. You're forced to watch that. No, it has to be. But in any case, there was a woman...
That hasn't caused you to repent,
Well, no, it hasn't caused me to repent.
So I guess you don't mind it, then.
I can feel like I can kill myself in hell. In any case, the Oh No woman was a woman on the soundtrack who...
What it was, she
anticipated every Lucy contrived disaster by screaming, "Oh no, this woman was behind me in the theater."
Okay.
She anticipated every contrived disaster by screaming, "Oh no," and then laughing uproariously at the ensuing fun or lack thereof. The movie is essentially just lame. I didn't hate it, I just wished I was taking a nap, and I considered the possibility, but I figured the Oh No woman would keep me awake.
What else did you watch?
Did
you watch anything better than that?
Well, yes. Okay. Even Wall Street Money Never Sleeps is better than that. Wall Street Money Never Sleeps is not, I would say, a good film. However, it is so silly it's entertaining. Uh-huh. It has a plot that I could spend the entire rest of this podcast describing to you,
and
it still wouldn't make any sense.
Okay.
But it has nothing but plot, and the plot just keeps coming. And I don't have any idea what message Oliver Stone thinks or thought he was conveying with this film. I understand that the idea was to make up for having made the original Wall Street, which he thought was a cautionary tale, and was shocked, I tell you, to find that instead of a cautionary tale, he had made a cult hero and a role model for an entire generation of people who indeed thought greed was good. And by the end of this movie, I think we may conclude that he does not think greed is good.
Okay.
However, everybody comes out of it pretty much okay, and it's sort of ridiculous. Even with one exception, there's one bad guy,
right?
And he gets his comeuppance, and everybody else lives happily ever after, except for Frank Langella, who did the Anna Karenina bit in front of a subway early on in the film. But it's entertaining, but God knows it's not good. And what else did I see? Oh, I saw Cairo Time. Cairo Time is a very nice...
Hasn't opened yet.
It opens on Friday. It has a very nice middle-aged romance. It is, however, deliberately paced, which is what we say in the business when we want to say slow without making it sound like we think this is a downside.
Right.
And in this case, it's not a downside, but it is not what you would call action-packed. It's not what you would call a happening movie. It is essentially the relationship between Patricia Clarkson, who it's nice to see her get a lead role,
right,
and Alexander Siddig, who you know, even if you don't know him, he's the prince in Syriana.
Okay.
And he is... he's this Egyptian fellow who her husband has sent to meet her at the airport because he's held up. It doesn't really matter why he's held up. The whole point is that he's held up so that she spends several days in Cairo with Alexander Siddig.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, obvious that they're going to become romantically involved. But they never really quite do.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of talk about it. It's just, it's a nice little film, and it's kind of nice to see the idea of romance without it getting tawdry amongst people who are not in their 20s. So, it's kind of, on that level, it's nice. It's a nice little film, but believe me, it's not going to be to everybody's taste. I think you would be bored by it, for example. I could be wrong. The Cairo footage is really nice, and they don't treat it like a travelogue. No one goes, oh, look, it's the such and such. You know, it's just sort of there. And that's kind of nice. So I recommend it of the things that opened this past. Of the things I saw this past week, it doesn't open until Friday, at which point I'm afraid it's probably going to be run over by some of the things that are opening. So.
We have this Thursday Horror Picture Show this week.
Yes.
I won't say what day, you can figure it out.
Yeah, I always find that kind of redundant, although I always end up listing it in the paper as the Thursday Horror Picture Show, da-da-da-da-da, Thursday at... But in any case, in this week, it is Horror of Dracula,
right,
which is the second of the big Hammer horror films, the one that established Christopher Lee as Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's entertaining. It's not, I would call, a great picture by any stretch of the imagination. Others will disagree. I don't find Lee's Dracula to be nearly as interesting as Lugosi's Dracula, but then again, I saw Lugosi's Dracula years before I ever saw Christopher Lee's, so that may have some bearing on it. It's an exciting film in many respects. It moves very fast, and I'm kind of looking forward to it simply by virtue of the fact that when we ran that last Peter Cushing Christopher Lee picture, The Gorgon, for the Thursday Horror Picture Show, it was such a pleasant experience with the audience who, you know, kind of laughed at it, but not badly. They laughed at, you know, some of the silliness they laughed at. But in overall, I think it was one of the more enjoyable audience experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping to repeat that this week. And I guess we'll find out. Next week's Asheville Film Society is Pedro Almodovar's
Women on the Verge
of a Nervous Breakdown.
Yes.
Which is a 1988 Almodovar picture with Carmen Maura. And an almost unrecognizable, looks like he's prepubescent, Antonio Banderas. And it's not actually his earliest, but it's probably, let's see, his first, Banderas' first film for Almodovar would be Labyrinth of Passion, in which he plays a gay Muslim terrorist. This one he plays a kind of nerdy mama's boy with a ridiculous hair style. It's kind of hard to describe. It's probably Almodovar's least disturbing film, unless you stop and think about that it really is dealing with, oh, suicide, possible murder, insanity. I mean, it's real wholesome stuff, but it's done in such a light, almost farce-type tone that I don't think anybody really noticed at the time because it's really played broadly. It's almost, some of it is even slapsticky. It's definitely the most accessible Almodovar picture. So, I'm not going to say an awful lot about it because it's the sort of thing where it's kind of fun to just be surprised by what happens because it's full of surprises. It's typical Almodovar in that basically it's an overfed soap opera that makes fun of itself while it's playing.
We have a cornucopia of...
It's a disgusting array in many respects, yes.
I guess the big one is the Facebook movie.
Probably the Facebook movie, yes. Which,
or The Social Network.
The Social Network,
yes. It's officially titled. Which,
yes.
David Fincher.
Yes, that doesn't really thrill me because I am probably one of the few people who does not know a David Fincher movie that he likes.
I saw a big standee for this movie with some critic I never heard of, just waxing ecstatic over David Fincher in this movie.
Well, everybody is waxing ecstatic over this movie. The thing about this movie that I find interesting is that it is written by a man, Aaron Sorkin,
right,
who does not like Facebook, does not like the whole concept of online socializing,
right,
and that makes it kind of interesting to me. So I'm really curious to see what comes of this. I mean, right now...
Well, I'm just assuming that anything...
It's got like 100% approval rating, and it just keeps growing. I mean, it's now to like 25 or 29 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. And sure, some of them are by quote whores and people that it doesn't matter. But some of them are not. I mean, you got by now you've got David Denby, you've got David Edelstein. I mean, you're starting to get some really big names that actually think this movie is good. Now, that's not saying that it necessarily will be. I'll feel more comfortable if somebody doesn't like it. When everybody likes something, I'm always a little skeptical of it.
I'm just assuming the life has been sucked out of it by Fincher.
Well, yeah, but I guess we'll find out because it's kind of an inescapable title.
Yes.
It's one of those you've got to see this movie type thing if you're going to be cinematically savvy, because right now everybody is, not everybody, but a lot of people are piling onto the best movie of the year syndrome, which of course that's a little bit of quote whoredom right there, because if you call it best movie of the year, chances are much greater you're going to find yourself on the DVD box or on a later poster or something. But it has a little competition because this is the week that the Americanized version of Let the Right One In, simply called now Let Me In, comes out. Now here's the surprising thing about this. I still think it's superfluous. Sight unseen, I think this is superfluous. But it hasn't gotten any bad reviews yet. Apparently, it isn't a travesty of a mockery of a sham of a farce of two farces put together of a film. It seems like it might actually be somewhat good. Who knows? Granted, this does not have quite the same caliber of reviews, but some of the people who have reviewed it have been... The kind of person that I would at least note that they gave it a good review, not just go, oh, it's him. So I'm really kind of curious about this film, which is more than I can say for... Well, let's... There's this movie called Case 39, starring Renee Zellweger. It's been sitting around for a while. In fact, most of the rest of the world seems to have seen this last spring.
Well, you mean countries, not actual people.
Yes, yes, countries. It was released elsewhere to generally really bad reviews. Mm-hmm. And it's Renee Zellweger, and I think Ian McShane's in it, and Bradley Cooper is in it. And it's some sort of supernatural thriller about a caseworker, a social caseworker who finds that this case that she has been working on of child abuse is not as simple as it seems, because there must be something evil going on. I'm not sure what evil, but there's something going on. And it's one of our lots on Friday to find out whether or not this is... You know, they've opened it opposite Social Network and Let Me In. This is a death wish. There is no way this movie is going to make money. So they're just like, it's being dumped basically by opening it this week. And speaking of being dumped, We have a movie called Chain Letter.
Right.
Chain Letter is, believe it or not, supposedly about someone who murders people who don't forward his chain mail.
People don't have mail anymore.
Well, this is their email. If you don't forward it to 10 friends within the next 5 minutes, he comes and kills you, I guess. I don't know.
So he's actually mailing them? It's inefficient in this day and age.
Well, whatever. In any case...
Gmail account is free.
I know, but...
And he could kill far more people.
Well, he is. I was talking about email. These are email chains, yes.
Okay.
You know, if you break that email chain, then I guess it's actually easier to find out whether or not you're forwarding.
So he's emailing people.
Yes. This is chain email.
Okay.
You know, where if you don't do this, you know...
Can they Google his email address?
Best friend will die.
On Facebook.
Probably. You can find him on the social network. And in any case, this is what I have been told that the movie is about. It's what the trailer makes it look like it's about.
Okay.
This appears to have been inflicted on only one theater in town, the Carmike, and I guess that means that it was picked up by their crack booking office, who, whenever they have picked up anything like this... have picked up the most abominable crap. It has been Lynch Mob, The 13th Alley, Malevolence. Is that what it was? Yes. Malevolence, which was really good because if you worked there at the time, you saw that the caliber of people who went to see this movie would come to the box office and ask for a ticket, not to malevolence, mind you, but for a ticket to male violence. No comment. So I figure this is going to be more of the same abominable crap.
Right. Well, you're not going to watch it. So.
That's true.
So you sit here talking about how interesting Let Me In and Social Network look.
And I'm going to make you go watch Male Violence.
Chain Letter.
Chain Letter, yes. Well, I think they should have called it Chain Mail. Then it could have been a knight.
So what if, like, you just don't check your email?
Well, I guess you're meat on the hoof, then, for whoever this guy is. I'm not really sure how this works. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe I don't understand the plot fully. It might be too complicated for me. I mean, it mostly features people who are, like, 36th in the cast list on Twilight. But it does have Brad Dourif in it. But, you know, and meaning no disrespect, I like Brad as a person. And
I'm hoping this is the movie he went to film instead of coming to the film festival.
Well, the whole thing about that is let's bear something in mind, and that is very simple. When is the last time Brad has ever said no to a film script?
I don't know.
I think never. Never is my guess. Just judging by some of the things he's in, I don't think he has ever turned anything down. You know, I mean, it's not that he has the career sense of Bela Lugosi or, God forbid, John Carradine. It's just the fact that I think he'll do anything. You offer him money, he'll do it. And it's not so much out of desperation like they were, it's just that I don't think it occurs to him to turn anything down. So. And, in addition, we do have one thing that looks like it could be good, which I don't expect will do anything, opening this weekend. I mean, aside from Cairo Time, which I'm afraid also isn't going to exactly ignite the box office, and that is Animal Kingdom, which is this apparently quite brutal Australian crime thriller that has almost as good a Rotten Tomatoes rating as The Social Network and Let Me In. And it has a lot more reviews. It's got, like, out of 99 reviews, 95 say that this is a terrific film. However, that was kind of about the same way with The Square, which came out here a few months ago. And The Square, which was a terrific crime thriller. Just, you know, if you had put a sign on the theater saying that it was quarantined for plague, you could probably not have kept people out anymore. There's something about this town and Australian crime thrillers that don't go together. I don't know what it is, but I really suspect that this, no matter how good it is probably going to have a similar chilly reception. And I think it's also, let's face it, our readership, for the most part, doesn't go to movies like this. And so nothing that we say about it will really have that much impact. When it comes, I don't think, have we ever been able to sell anybody on a violent film?
I don't know. I haven't talked to everybody.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, have you ever seen a violent film that was not a popular film, but have you ever seen a violent film that we have promoted or endorsed that people went to?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, I can't think of a single one.
But I don't think I've personally increased viewership on anything. So
I don't think that's true. But, now, granted, they probably thought it was me.
Well, I mean, I'm watching crap, so normally...
You've had some pretty tasty stuff in the recent past.
Yeah, but the town was going to make money regardless.
You also had Machete. There you go.
I don't know if
violent
that
film that you could not
right.
really impact. So maybe you can
impact Animal Kingdom. I'm saying that's we need more of
a bigger sampling.
Yes. Scientific method, Ken.
Be scientific, douchebag.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, that seems to have taken care of us for one week. So, I'm still Ken Hanke, and...
I'm Justin Sowler.
Yeah, I recognize you. And We are coming to you through the courtesy of the Mountain Express and from the incredible production values provided by
Steve Shanafelt.
Yes. See, you can recognize him too. It's good we all know each other. That's convenient. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's probably about as much as we have to say for this week. And next week, with any luck, we'll be back with some more bastard nonsense.